Hi, and welcome to Brain Observations, the podcast where we are curious about how the brain and the mind works and how you can use this knowledge to change your experience of life. I set out to find and talk to some of the most knowledgeable people out there, and at the end of each episode, I sum up what we've learned from today's guest. Me, I'm Maria Sundell. I'm a clinical neurologist, and with this podcast, I hope to make scientific evidence on well-being and brain health more easily available. I also want to mention that even though I am a medical doctor, this is a personal project and not affiliated with my hospital. The information in the podcast is meant to educate and inspire and should not be taken as medical advice. I advise you to discuss any potential changes to your lifestyle with your own personal doctor, and this is even more important if you are experiencing trouble with your mental health. Today's guest, Dr. Cynthia Price, is a research professor at the University of Washington in Seattle, United States. She has a clinical background in psychology and massage therapy, and her research interest lies in the study of interoceptive awareness training for improved health and well-being, particularly working with people who have disconnected from their body due to stress, trauma, or pain. She's involved on a national level in organizations focused on promoting integrative healthcare, and in addition to this, she's also the director of the nonprofit Center for Mindful Body Awareness. She's the author of two scales to measure interoceptive awareness and is working with teaching to spread awareness and competence within the area. Thank you for joining the podcast. Welcome to Brain Observations.
Thank you for having me, Maria.
And it's a lovely morning where you are, I assume, and it's closing in on evening here. So I think we have a different caffeine level now, maybe.
Probably.
So you do have a background both in psychology and massage therapy and a research interest in something called interoception. If you could tell us a little bit about what interoception is and how this is a nice blend between your expertise.
Sure. So interoception is really basically a simple definition would be the processing of sensory information in the body. Where my research is focused is really on how to help people develop their capacity to attend to sensory information in the body, which is the same as increasing their interoceptive awareness. And the work of using touch-based therapies like body work to help develop that is what my professional last many decades have really been about in one way or the other, whether working as a therapist or working as a researcher.
The connection between the body and brain is nothing new, but doing research and talking about interoception, is that something that is quite recent or something that has been worked on for a long time?
It's fairly recent. The term itself was not a term that we used, and it's not a term I used, but I'm not alone. Until fairly recently, we talked more about body awareness, which is an umbrella term for all types of awareness of the body. It's not specific to interoception, but it would include it. So it's been very recent to incorporate that term, and that really came out of, I think, a lot of the neuroscience research and mindfulness studies, where there was more a focus on what is happening in the brain when people are really present and paying attention to their bodies. And so people like myself, who were already involved in research that involved this component of presence and mindfulness and body awareness, went, oh, wow, wait a minute, that term applies to what I do too, and got involved in sort of this larger conversation that brought together people from different disciplines in terms of thinking about the use of that term, I think, more broadly. But really, the whole orientation of body awareness is not really new. It's just the research specific to the relationship to really internally paying attention. That piece is new in a certain way, for sure. And I think I'm one of the first researchers that's really focused on looking clinically whether people are learning very specific skills to increase their interoceptive awareness.
And why is this awareness so important to us?
So being able to develop and have more awareness of what's happening in our bodies is very linked to regulation. Interoception is linked to regulation or homeostasis in the body on all sorts of levels, most of which are unconscious. But it includes the realm of emotional regulation, which I'm particularly interested in as someone who works with mental health concerns. And so being able to be more aware of how we feel inside and having that awareness be linked to our bodily experience is something a lot of people don't do well. And when we're able to do it more well, we're more able to emotionally regulate, we're more able to engage in self-care, in relationship to others that helps us not get overly triggered or reactive in ways that so often people do. And then that can lead to more distress, right? Or more use of, I work a lot with people who have substance use disorder. So more use of substances without really having the skills to kind of notice that, oh, wait, I'm getting escalated and I can feel it in my body. Take a pause. What can I do differently? And those are basic mindfulness skills that are very much attended to in all sorts of approaches. And so it's super important for health and well-being.
And do you think this is something then that we don't learn or that we disconnect from the body when we're adults?
That's a really great question. I think, but I don't really know, that mostly we unlearn it. You know, I think that most people are born very aware. Babies are like very aware of their sensory experience, and we learn to manage that when it's a lot of distress by avoiding and not paying attention. And some of that is, you know, certain societies where there's more of that sort of overlay, I would imagine, than others. That's not something from a cultural comparison thing I think we've looked at really from a research perspective, but would be interesting to do. And, you know, we're all different. Some people never really unlearn it that much and others do. And I think a lot of that is not only the family you grew up in, but also what kinds of stressful life events you've been exposed to. Because the more of those we have, the more we, as a normal sort of way of coping, are going to develop patterns of protecting ourselves from physical and emotional pain. And that leads to disconnection from the body typically.
Is it connected then to trying to avoid emotions or trying to like push emotions down? Let's say that if you're a child and you learn kind of like don't cry or don't show emotions.
I think that's one thing that happens. I think there's lots of ways that probably people develop avoidance tendencies, right? And sometimes it may be as a child, sometimes it may be older in life, I mean, in early adulthood. And some of that is really important skills to have so that we can function, right? You know, we have a certain amount of distress or stress in our lives and we need to just, you know, ignore it for a while and get through the day. Sometimes it's not emotions necessarily, it can be physical discomfort as well. So people have chronic pain, for example. So these are very important coping mechanisms to have. It's when they last beyond when they're needed, right? And they become these automatic responses that lead to more long-term disconnection from self, really, because how we feel inside is so much a part of who we are.
And what do you mostly see in your clinical work when it comes to how people disconnect and why?
I have both for the last many decades been working in research with people who have, and in my clinical practice before then, people who have very significant trauma histories. So my view is somewhat skewed, but for these folks, whether they have substance use disorder and trauma or just, you know, a background of physical and sexual abuse as children and adults, there tends to be, now it's not always, but there tends to be a very strong disconnect of what their emotional experience is internally. And so people are very reactive, you know, they get triggered easily with stress and don't often have the understanding to know what they're feeling in relationship to that trigger. So what we see a lot is that people, you know, they get through their lives, but they have a lack of emotional awareness, a lack of ability to understand those connections, and often then just kind of loop over and over again in this kind of reactive cycle that only creates more distress. So when we can help people learn to bring their attention into their bodies and learn to be present with what they experience that they normally don't pay attention to, we see big, big changes in the ability to understand what's happening in the background, which is really more typically emotional stuff, and to make those connections that involve being present and slowing down and go, oh, when I have this pain in my belly, I'm actually feeling really sad, you know? And so instead of when you have the pain in your belly, you go off and drink, or you have the pain in your belly and you just distract yourself in some other way. So it's finding that ability to stay with that pain in the belly and go, oh, I'm feeling sad. How can I be with that sadness? How can I take care of that part of me that's feeling this way? What's going on right now? And that changes people's capacity to go through their lives in a very different way once they can learn how to do that. And the other thing that happens that's very, very positive and very empowering for people is this ability, once you can do that, to realize that your body can be a place that has enormous information that's very helpful to you. But also, when one learns to be with those places that can be uncomfortable when we're distressed and pay attention and be with it, is that distress dissipates. It doesn't stay as distressing. And to have that experience of that kind of shift from something that's really very uncomfortable to a place where it's like, oh, I'm really okay. I can be with this. You know, it's about tolerating distress, really. But that moves into acceptance. And that moves into like, oh, my belly actually feels okay right now. It actually is a place that I can trust this information. I can be with that place and actually have a relationship with it that's not scary, but actually helpful to me. So there's this other piece that happens over time, which is really about the body being a resource for being a place of information that's useful, but also oftentimes, instead of the body being the scary place, the body can be a place that's really quite looked to, you know, instead of avoided, it's looked to. And there's not only that look to for information, but it's looked to as a place of being a place of connecting to me, right? I can connect to me and that feels good. So there's so many different levels of healing that can take place over time, in where when you watch this unfold for somebody who for a very long time hasn't ever had that experience, it's like witnessing a flower opening.
As if the body just keeps signaling until we pay attention to what it's trying to say. And then when you pay attention, it goes a little bit like, okay, you're listening. I can cool down a bit.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right.
And when we're talking about babies, what I find so amazing with small children is co-regulating. That when you put them close, especially skin to skin, and you regulate your own breathing and your own emotions, it co-regulates them. It's like an inborn function in a way that I think is so beautiful that you can kind of like regulate each other.
Absolutely. And when we're doing work, therapist to client one-on-one, in this relationship of really paying attention to helping someone learn these skills of bringing their attention into their bodies, it is the therapist's ability to be in presence that is extraordinarily helpful for exactly the reason you're talking about. So if I am the therapist and I'm able to be in deep presence in relationship to my work with someone else, and you add touch to that, doesn't have to be that you do, but because I think a lot of psychotherapists or other practitioners who may do this type of work without touch, you can be in presence and that same quality is being modeled and communicated to the person you're working with. But when you add touch, it absolutely is communicating in even another level. This ability to be in presence and asking someone to bring their awareness to a very specific region of the body where that touch is happening, which is how the work I do is designed, is extraordinarily powerful for that very reason, that there's two people being very present together, and the therapist's part of that is no small piece.
And in your research, you describe also interoception as being multimodal or multifaceted.
Yeah, that's really about the ways in which people, when we're teaching people to develop and increase their skills in this regard, we teach different components that sort of add up to facilitating their capacity for sustained attention in the body. And so those components involve very specific things that I think have been identified by others who have written about interception conceptually, that we need to be able to identify our sensations, which in my work we call body literacy. It's the ability to articulate and describe sensory experience. There's the ability to access one's internal experience. So that's really a mindfulness skill of bringing attention into the body. And there's the ability to sustain attention. So again, that's a mindfulness skill to really help yourself maintain awareness in a very in the body. And if you do wander off, to know how to come back. And with that comes an appraisal process, which is really often tied to the more you're able to sustain attention, the more you can pay attention to how things shift and how what you're experiencing has meaning to you. And so those are all the different components that in the mindful body awareness work that I'm doing, we're building skills. So we start with the body literacy, then we move into access. And so when we're working with people who for whom this is challenging, it's very unfamiliar to them, it may be uncomfortable for them, we start slowly and we build on these skills. For people for whom this isn't difficult to do, you don't need to do all this. So it really depends on where the person's at in relationship to this material. So that's part of what we're talking about when we talk about the different facets of this greater capacity.
You need to first figure out where you are, what's your starting point, because that is so important. We all have a different brain, so to speak. We all have different experiences. We grew up with different inputs, influences, and we have learned and unlearned different things. So you first always need to kind of figure out, okay, where am I and where is it reasonable for me to start? Is there anything else that I might need to learn first before I can get to the next step? But that part, I think we sometimes miss that when we try to learn new things, but it's so important.
I think that's right. And I think that's why, especially for work with folks who are struggling with different kinds of issues in their lives, being able to work with them one-on-one in order to help determine or assess where they are at and what kind of pacing and what kind of being able to be creative around how they learn and responding to what kind of pathways you go in the teaching processes. You can do that when you work one-on-one with someone. It's hard to do that in a group. Impossible, really. Not that you can't do a lot of this teaching in that way, but it's when you're working with people who really need that extra attention, it's extremely helpful. When we're talking about helping people to learn a new way of being, we start with what we want them to learn and try and support that. And so when we have folks who are very, very verbal, very, very sort of cognitively focused all the time and want to tell their stories and interpret what they're experiencing all the time, we're saying, no, you know, let's come right down in here. This is where I want you to bring your attention right here into your shoulder, into your gut, into wherever it is that we're focusing on together. So it's helping them quiet that processing in their cognitive way that they're very good at already.
And so how can we learn more about how good we are at this, basically. What are questions that you can ask yourself to kind of gauge a little bit how well connected you are to your body?
Well, I mean, if you're just walking around in your daily life, you know, most of us, I think, who've been exposed to any kind of mindfulness practice get taught or introduced to the idea of really feeling our diaphragm moving on the inhale and exhale of the breath. It's the most common thing that's body focused in any kind of mindfulness practice. And that is interoceptive awareness, when you can really attend to that feeling of your chest filling up with air as you breathe in, and the deflation of that area of your body as you breathe out. I think that's why breath gets so much focus. And because we're doing it all the time, you can pay attention to your breath while you're driving, while you're doing the dishes, you know, while you're doing anything at all, practically. We all know that when we tend to feel anxious, our breathing is affected, right? And so that's one of the ways that I think for most people, it's the most accessible and easy thing to remember, is if we can pay attention to how we're breathing, we start developing our attention to our internal experience. And our breathing is such a wonderful way to help ourselves regulate all the time. So that's my simple answer to your question, because it's so accessible to everyone. Everyone knows what we're talking about when we talk about a breath in this way, right? So, you know, if you're someone more interested in really thinking about interception and how interceptive awareness, how much of it you do or don't do, one can look up the Maya instrument to help assess that. This is the multidimensional assessment of interceptive awareness. It is for sure the most used scale and one of the few scales that's really developed to assess frequency of use of these kinds of skills.
And it seems as though sustaining the awareness could be one of the hardest things to do. Because I feel like personally, if I really try, I can sense my body quite well, but sustaining that attention is still really hard.
The ability to do what you're talking about, that you're doing, of just attending to what do I notice in my body? How am I doing on just sort of a second by second, sort of whatever you're doing in life, you know, whether you're sitting here during a podcast, whether you're talking to your partner, whether you're picking your kids up from school, whatever you're doing, to be able to go, how am I doing? Kind of just check in. That's a super useful, incredibly helpful skill. And it's not about sustained awareness. It's really a check-in in a way, right? But it allows us again to notice really quickly whether there's anything more that needs attention, whether it's in the moment or a little later, right? Because I can go, oh, I'm feeling pretty stressed right now. What can I do about that? What's that about? You know, sort of that inquiry that can come from noticing internal sensation. The sustained attention piece, I think, is absolutely critical for someone who wants to use these skills therapeutically. And what my research suggests is that those people, when someone learns to sustain attention in a very specific region of the body, by sustain, we're talking 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. So it's really a meditation-like experience of really paying attention internally to a specific region of the body and maintaining that attention so that whatever might be coming up from doing that experience is information that can lead to shifts that are emotional, that are physical, that can have meaning to someone, that is something they can do something with, right? But it's that being inside for that length of time that for folks who are struggling their lives and they want to use this skill to help them understand their bodies and develop this relationship and have things move and change. Yes, I think that ability is absolutely key. And if you're doing great, if you don't really have any major things going on in your life that need this level of attention, then, you know, it's better to just do those little check-ins all the time, because that just is all you need. So I guess there's not, you know, my point is that it depends. It depends on who you are and what you're working with internally. For folks who are really struggling with a lot of stressors and a lot of physical or mental health issues, then yes, I think it's extremely important.
And so when you teach people to do those little check-ins, is it just like a general feeling of the body, or is it like a little body scan?
Well, we actually teach, we do the body scan as one way to kind of do the quick check-in kind of thing. But a lot of what we're helping people learn is where for them individually do they tend to hold stress. So we're all different in this way. There's a generalization that most of us get tight shoulders when we're stressed out, right? Like we can feel that. And the majority of people that I probably know and you probably know would say that's the case. But there's a lot of other regions of the body that we don't really feel very well. And, you know, we don't notice them. Or there's an old injury, or there's a tendency to misinterpret what some feeling in the body might be that's uncomfortable and think that it's, you know, I'm having problems with my digestion, or I have this old injury and that's what's bothering me. But when you go in and you explore it, it's nuanced, right? It has a whole nother, there can be a lot of other information to uncover. So for example, we were working with somebody in one of our research studies recently who had lived for 30 years with this stomach pain. Well, he just thought it was stomach pain, that there was just nothing he could do about that stomach pain. And it was only through this process of learning interceptive awareness through mindful body awareness that we were teaching him, that he brought his attention into that region of the body, learned to sustain his attention in that region of the body, and really came across all this emotional material that was related to the abusive experience he had as a child. Now, this is a man who was in his 60s who had been addicted to opioids for 40 years. And he realized in the course of this work that he had never made the connection between that pain in his belly and the really distressing experiences he had as a child that he had never paid attention to or done any work to help resolve. And so for him, it was like this amazing insight to how he had spent 40 years, you know, dealing with his distress by using substances. And he had this moment where he goes, oh my gosh, you know, I now know the work I need to do. I need to go and deal with all these feelings that I have that I know I had this history, but I didn't realize that it was sitting here in my belly, right? And so it's that kind of thing that I think is so, it's not uncommon that we run into this in the work that we do. The importance of really learning to sustain attention and what it can lead to.
Because I did something similar once where I felt really anxious and stressed out, and I was trying to figure out, like, why am I so anxious in these situations? So I would sit down and I would just try to focus on the feeling, try to focus on the kind of anxiety. And then go from that to, okay, where in my body do I feel this anxiety? Okay, it feels like I'm not somewhere in this part of my chest. It feels a bit like this. And then after a while, there was just this subconscious thought patterns that just kind of came out. And this is the thing that is going on in the back of my head. And that is the root cause triggering this anxiety, triggering this feeling. But I hadn't really realized that before, because I've just been going like, oh, I feel overwhelmed, or I feel stressed, or kind of using an umbrella term for how I was feeling. So it seems a bit like what you're describing.
I think that's exactly what I'm describing. And it's that process of, as you say, it's sort of a deep dive internally of just, it's like a level of inquiry that's very based in the body and of really bringing attention into the region that is calling you in a way, right? And that's what you did. And that is very much what we're teaching people to do. And so this is a lovely example of here you are, a very high functioning person in the world, right? Where we all have things. You know, you don't have to have some major mental health disorder, but all of us have big and little ways that we hold things inside and we tend to not know. As you said, you know, you kind of come up with an explanation and we don't necessarily know until we do that deeper dive, sort of the background of it, and we uncover it. And that's sort of the insight piece of this work, right? Which, you know, is just like any therapeutic process. You know, it's like you have that little light bulb go off and you go, oh, wow, now I understand myself a little bit better. And it's just one more way to do that.
So it's uncovering subconscious thought patterns that are spinning in the back of our head, affecting how we feel without us necessarily being so aware of it.
It's not always thought patterns, but it can include thought patterns. Yes. Sometimes I think people truly have, I don't know physiologically how this occurs at all, but a sense of sort of compartmentalized in a very specific region of the body, an injury. You know, it could be literally a physical injury that's still left from some sort of physical trauma, whether it's medical trauma from repeated surgeries, whether it's a fall, whether it's the way we contract when we've had some sort of experience that might be more physical or psychological. But I do actually think there is something that's not necessarily a thought pattern. It's our body's pattern of holding that when we can get up close to it by that deep dive internally of sustaining attention in a region, it starts to open up a little. It's sort of instead of holding really tight, there's this opening up. And when that opening up happens, our understanding, that information kind of floats up into our awareness. And I mean, I think it's fascinating. I do not know how to explain it from, as I said, from sort of a physiological perspective, but that is what we see.
How do you choose which region to focus on?
Yeah, we do two things. Where we're teaching this, we first are wanting to make sure people really able to bring attention into the body. So we might choose to find regions of the body that seem pretty safe and comfortable for them so that they can go in and really understand what it is to be inside a specific region of the body, to be present in there. It needs to be fairly accessible to them. And then we move over time to being able to help them go into places where there's clearly a holding pattern in the body. And that is often obvious by the places where they're tense, the places they have pain, the places where their body tells them, I'm feeling anxious. You know, I have that nervous feeling in my belly, or I have, like I was explaining, that man who said, I have this pain or kind of weight heaviness in my gut. So we go where they're aware of those things. Or when we're doing touch-based therapy, we also feel those. As therapists, you can feel the places and help the person become more aware of, oh, what's going on over here in your thigh, that there's really a lot of discomfort in your thigh, but you walk around all day and you may not notice it, right? Because it's not as apparent. So it's both of those things, but mostly it's following the lead of the client.
Any risks involved that it can trigger too much? That if you had a lot of previous trauma, it can become overwhelming then to go into your body? Or
yeah, that's why you have to titrate this. I mean, that's why we in our work with folks who are really struggling with mental health issues, we go very slowly. Very, very slowly. And why we start with really just finding words to describe what you feel. And we start more externally on the body. So for example, using more like a little bit of massage somewhere and saying, oh, what do you notice here? We don't go into the internal areas of the body until, you know, right away. We wait a couple weeks and then we move into that. And we have to follow the pace that the person that we're working with is comfortable with so that they aren't overly triggered. That's the last thing you want. You can't teach people to do this work if they're so anxious. They're not going to do it. Right? They're not going to be able to go inside. They're not going to be able to stay there. That's exactly what triggers leaving, right? And coming out and mind-wandering is, I don't feel comfortable here. I'm going to leave, right? So you're our systems are really good at that. And so that's why this whole process of really pacing this work and scaffolding the training to match what works for somebody so that they feel more and more and more comfortable. You develop trust with the therapist you're working with. You know, the therapist learns to know what the person's areas of the body are that are more comfortable to go to and are not so comfortable to go to, so that they can make wise decisions. So yes, you have to be careful. And I think one of the things that this question always comes up is, don't you re-traumatize people? You know, isn't that the biggest risk? You know, if you're working with dissociation, you know, how do you do that? I have 40 years of experience doing this work. And when you are really tuned in and present with somebody and you're helping them to do that themselves, it is the most beautiful way of really negotiating that, so that you really can help facilitate someone's capacity to go inside and do it in a way and at a pacing and a timing that they're successful at doing that without having that dissociative response or the re-traumatization occur, which one wants to do everything one can to avoid that. And if you see it happening, to backtrack and do the repair needed to, and the awareness needed to help make sure that doesn't happen again. So in my experience, training lots and lots of clinicians and working with them in research as well, with people who are really susceptible to this, vulnerable to this due to their trauma histories, you can do a beautiful job. And they do. These therapists do a beautiful job of really working in a way that's really, really comfortable for clients. And they make great strides. So I think there's a lot to be learned about how to do that and how to do it well.
Do you feel like this is something that needs to be given more attention, that needs to be taught more?
I do. I think this is one of the reasons that a lot of mental health therapists are so uncomfortable with touch, is not realizing the ways that when you work somatically, it actually supports people being present, and that supports them being less susceptible to leaving their bodies or being triggered, right? So the more we can support people being grounded in their bodies and centered and present, we're helping them learn skills that are sort of the opposite trajectory, right? It's what they need to learn in order to not continue those patterns of disconnection that are so distressing but also so protective. So yeah, I think body workers who I work with a lot also don't learn these skills. They don't learn these skills at all in their training. And a lot of them go on and do advanced training in order to learn them, whether they learn them with me, whether they learn them by going into other kinds of somatic advanced trainings available to them. So lots of people who are interested in working with trauma learn this stuff, but they often learn it outside of their initial formal training. They have to go elsewhere to learn it. So yeah, I think there's lots of clinicians who bump into this, whether they're nurses, occupational therapists, physical therapists, physicians, who bump into this in the course of their clinical care and they don't know what to do. And that's different than learning a therapeutic approach, but it overlaps with the overall issue of how common it is for people to be triggered and disconnect from their bodies and how to help reduce the chances of that happening in any kind of clinical interaction. Needs more attention in general.
And so if you are a person with no extensive mental health care issues that need to be addressed first, what would be a good way to kind of try this out and work a little bit on this? You mentioned to focus on your breathing. Is physical touch another thing that could be a good start?
Yeah, and yoga also is very focused on, yoga is taught in lots of different ways, but there are yoga teachers who are very focused on attending to internal experience of the body awareness component in the context of doing yoga. And I think that's another avenue that is very, very useful for developing body awareness. If you have a teacher that has that orientation. Feldenkrais is also very focused on internal body awareness in the context of movement. So there's lots and lots of different ways of developing internal body awareness or interoceptive awareness. And it's really what you're drawn to. Some people really love movement, and movement is how they are more able to access what they feel. And that's where yoga or Feldenkrais are really great options. Some people really need to be still to pay attention. And that's where either the kind of work involving a body-centered approach with touch or doing meditation with a body-oriented kind of orientation are more useful. So again, it depends on who you are and what speaks to you.
And so for a final question, how do you think we can maintain this in children and help them develop this skill?
You know, I love your little vignette of talking about regulating your breathing when you have a distressed child, right? And whether you hold them close to you or whether you just, you know, put your hands on your shoulders and get eye to eye with them, right? It's all the ways that we can help our children both use our bodies to calm down when they're distressed by just noticing how we feel, using our breath. But it's also about the role of touch. When we're parents, we're touching our kids all the time. If, you know, we're helping put on their clothes, we're hugging them, we might be rubbing their backs before we go to sleep. So all of these things that involve touch to help a child, I think, make that connection. It doesn't have to be an intellectual understanding when they're little. Between, for example, when I was a kid, I had my back rubbed every single night before I went to sleep. And I think what I learned from that was how much I could relax, you know, just even without realizing I wasn't particularly tense necessarily, but you still are calming down when someone rubs your back even more than you might have been before you got in bed, right? And so you can feel that and you learn that without thinking about it. You learn that your system responds to touch, that your system responds and calms down with certain kinds of interactions. So we all know that when we're hugged, we have that experience. We all know that when our backs are rubbed, we have that experience. We know that when someone looks in our eyes and smiles at us and breathes with us, we have that experience. So as much of those kinds of things we can do as parents, and then as a child gets older, to help them notice, well, what are you noticing in your body when you're feeling? I mean, it's a simple question. You know, when you're feeling sad, where do you feel that? Those are really simple questions, but people can usually answer them, right? And it helps them make that link. And that link, keeping that link alive between what I feel in my body and what the emotion is, I think, enormously helpful. And it's all about what we're reteaching people in this kind of intervention when folks have lost that capacity. And it's really why they find it so useful. And they tell us that, you know, in our research, they say that the reason I keep doing some of the things I learned is it helps me understand how I feel. And so it's a tool in their toolbox that they need because they didn't have it anymore, right?
I think that's really beautiful. It's about teaching them emotional literacy and teaching them the importance of checking in with the body and understanding that your body and your brain, your mind, they're connected. And I think the work you're doing is so important.
And it's pretty simple. I mean, the concepts are pretty simple, right? And it's just how can we keep it, you know, grow it, keep it, expand it. It's not complicated, except that it becomes complicated sometimes, right? Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Maria, for having this podcast and inviting me to join you today.
It was amazing. Thank you so much for coming.
I would like for us to take the time to go through some important and interesting points of what we've talked about today. Interoception is the processing of sensory information in the body, And sensory information is how your brain collects info about the world around you, such as through touch, taste, smell, sight, or hearing. Increasing your interoceptive awareness is strengthening the capacity to attend to this sensory information in the body. Being able to develop and have more awareness of what is going on in our body is linked to regulation. It's linked to homeostasis or balance in the body, as well as emotional regulation. We become more able to engage in self-care and not be so triggered or reactive to things that happen to us. While suppressing emotional states or ignoring certain sensory experiences in the body can be adaptive in the moment and an important skill to have, it is when it lasts beyond when it is needed that it becomes damaging to us and leads to more long-lasting disconnection from the body and the self. So when someone can learn to bring their attention into the body and learn to be present with what they experience that maybe they normally don't pay attention to, there is an opening of what is going on in the background. Your body is an enormous source of information and a place you can rest in and go back to when you feel imbalanced. And developing that ability to stay in an emotion or stay in a physical sensation gives us the understanding that nothing is fixed. Everything fluctuates and uncomfortable feelings will change. If you're curious about your current level of interoceptive awareness, there is a scale Dr. Price helped develop called MAIA, short for Multidimensional Assessment of Interoceptive Awareness, that you can find online and you can test yourself with. So, how do you then do this? Well, one way to start developing this skill is to become aware of your breath and sustain that awareness. The breath is a sensory experience that is always with us and therefore a good place to start. Also, learning these skills can be separated in two ways. One is doing a quick check-in and feeling the current state of the body and emotions to possibly adapt something in your environment, such as if you're hungry, anxious, or in pain, and then you kindly attend to these signals. Another way is developing sustained interoceptive awareness, and this is the process that can lead to more profound revelations about yourself and about subconscious thought processes or emotions. You practice this through moving attention to one part of your body and keeping it there for maybe 5 to 20 minutes at a time. When you notice you get distracted, which will inevitably happen, you gently and without judgment redirect yourself back to that space. Often a lot of information can be held in areas that are uncomfortable to you. So you can try to figure out where you hold stress in the body, explore that area and see what you find. When an area opens up, an understanding of that information kind of floats up into awareness and can give us insights. But please remember that it's important to do this work under guidance of a professional if you have experienced significant trauma or have mental health issues. And as with everything else, it is a journey, not a destination, and it should be approached gently, slowly, and with loving kindness. I'm grateful that you chose to tune into this episode, and I really hope you got as much out of it as I did. Please go check out the website on brainobservations.com, and don't forget to subscribe. Have a great day, and I'll see you next time.